Well, Brent, it's made headlines all over the place. Something that's been ongoing here for a long time, finally coming to an end.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Connor Schultz win streak in light buggy. It's over. What'd you think I was talking about? Politics?
Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL.
Welcome, everyone, to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL. I'm Brent Smith alongside Shane Stetsny, and man, oh man, we're going back to Lena, Wisconsin, a short little bull ring like we like to call, and we're going to see some fiberglass fireworks, Shane.
Oh, absolutely. We know what to expect. We've already raced there once this year, and some of those races had a little bit of everything. There was, once again, a truck on fire. There was races almost won, but lost in the last few feet. There was all kinds of chaos. The wild man stood atop the podium. It offered a little bit of everything. I expect more of the same. But my goodness, hard to believe we're already at this point in the season. It's basically past halfway at this point. Time flies.
Yeah, it's crazy. And if you're going for a points championship, you better be in lockstep in that top five or be ready to pounce on the top three if you want to look for a top three finish in the year points, because we're running out of time. And we're going back to this short little bullring track. You better have your A game on. You better be ready to figure out how you're going to get through the carnage because it's so tight, but yet technical. And I just would love to see how it's all going to shake up, because if you don't have a good weekend at Lena, you're going to go into Bark River with a big, big deficit.
Well, how about a couple of these guys that we talked about before ERX that were really coming in on some hot streaks and did not have a very good weekend out in Minnesota? I think top of the list for me there is David Gay. He had a four-race win streak coming into ERX. In the 2 days out there, round six and seven, he finished 14th and fourth. So still has a points lead. It was 51 points, I believe, going into ERX. Now chopped that, took a big bite out of that. Still in control, but he's got to bounce back, right?
Yeah, and that's what you have to do. I'm sure they checked every nut and bolt on their cars, and they're ready to rock and roll. And it's not easy to do to make sure you can get to the finish with a healthy car or truck at Lena. You never know what's going to happen. You can plan it out all you want. You can talk to the best in the business, Shane. You can do all the prep work, but one bad corner, one bad connection with another driver, you can be sitting on the sidelines and calling it with us.
Well, another driver that ran into some bad luck and actually lost his points lead at ERX, Lorenzo Bonacci, finished 11th and 5th out there. He had the last four rounds before ERX, three wins and then a second in round five at Crandon. Not the points leader anymore. Jordan Bernlohr took over. Bonacci dealing with some electrical issues on the motor of that car. Interestingly enough, he posted about it on Facebook. I saw comments from other buggy guys, and like Matt Gerald was commenting like, oh, look for this. Mike Hester, who has, you know, been out of racing for a couple of years now, is commenting on it. You know, we had the same problem. Here's what you want to look for. So Bonacci, hopefully again, pointed in the right direction. Remember, he had a win already at Dirt City Motorplex this year.
Yeah, and it was weird not to see him running up front, but obviously there was a technical issue with the car and maybe an electrical problem. I'm sure they're going to figure it out. And when he's back on his A game, you're going to see him, especially at Lena. He's going to be quick. It's a driver's track. Then you head into Bark River. I mean, wide open, flat out like Crandon. He's got an opportunity to put a win streak together and capitalize and win this championship. But look at the Bernlohrs. You can't just say Jordan. I mean, they're both fast.
Yeah, Cole finally picking up that first win out at ERX. Jordan picked up his first win. That's their hometown track. Jordan picked up his first win there last year. Cole comes this year and wins it. So just what Pro Buggy needed, one more possible championship contender looking at the next couple of years. You know, that class absolutely stacked. But, you know, you talked about putting together a win streak. Connor Schultz had 9 in a row starting in round 10 last year. I'm not going to say the hot streak is over. He finished 2nd in round 7 to Evan Hockers, who was also the last guy to beat the Schultz twins at Bark River a couple of years ago. Or last year, I should say. You know, we were talking about you get into double digits. That's pretty rare territory. He didn't quite make it 9 in a row, but still historic.
Yeah, it's something that we'll never forget in our announcing career and wherever we go after that. Shane, I believe that he's going to be one of the talents that keeps moving up through the ranks. Not that he's going to go Pro Light, Pro 2, Pro 4, but I mean, I believe someday he'll be in a Pro Buggy. He has no intentions to now, but I think we should try it because he's just a great race car driver, him and his twin brother both, and they're not done winning yet. Every race, we know if he don't have a problem, he's up front.
To put together 9 wins in a row in such a competitive class, it's not... On the last podcast, we talked a little bit about some other guys who had 10 race win streaks. Christopher Pulvorti being one of those in ProLite, but that was when ProLite was struggling a little bit. They had like 6 trucks at some races. Now Connor's going out there against 20 light buggies and just keeps beating him over and over
again. Yeah, and then jumps into the single buggy division, and we seem we're just talking about him all the time, but he's driving these cars.
Well, let's move on a little bit. I kind of buried the lead here. I think the big headline from ERX made this point a couple times. I try to pick out a race from every weekend that I'm going to remember for a long time. I'm still thinking about ProLite round 2 from last year at Antigo. That great battle, the 4-way battle for the win. You know, Pro Spec round 4 at Antigo this year, unbelievable race. But man, the finale, Pro 4, round 7. Both of us, you know, after the race, kind of between the race and the podium, us still talking on air, we were out of words. I mean, we were at a loss for words. It was one of the most entertaining races I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was hard to catch our breaths. We didn't have a moment to speak on like a long straightaway. There was something going on throughout the whole race in the front and the back. And then you heard the drivers talking, didn't know who was in the lead. CJ Greaves didn't even understand where he was at.
CJ didn't know who was left. Yeah, CJ thought for a minute he might have been the only one left on the track.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, RJ Anderson, RJ went out there and was, I mean, for the first half, he looked like he was going to be the guy to beat, and then he spun. Jimmy Henderson took the lead. Henderson gave away the lead. Johnny Holcher took the lead for 1.5 corners and then spun, and then all of a sudden, everyone's looking around, okay, who's left? Who's the next guy out there? It's Paul Wolf, who ended up finishing with his first Pro 4 podium. He leads, and then CJ, of course, inevitably, CJ able to run down Paul Wolf and leads the 2 most important laps of the race, the last 2, takes the win. Like we said, CJ's podium speech kind of summed it up. He was like, he was trying to process what in the world just happened, and he was part of it.
Yeah, and that's so cool to hear CJ's point of it, because he didn't even understand, like you said, and... He's a phenomenal race car driver. You and I both know that. And he just waits until he needs to pounce on each spot. And he just lasted through that race. It was about longevity. And it was like an old back in the day enduro truck race. You know, who could keep the water in the radiator and who could keep the shocks cool enough to finish.
Well, yeah, CJ, I think surviving that race is probably a good way to put it. But, you know, talking about surviving, overcoming, how about Ryan Beat? Less than a week before ERX, crashed riding a dirt bike, fractured pelvis, fractured shoulder, had an injured foot, not to mention all the other bumps and bruises that you get when you crash on a motorcycle. Goes out, takes second in round 6, wins in round 7, could barely walk to the podium, had to get help getting out of the truck from his team. This is like tall tale urban legend stuff. You hear about like old school stock car guys in the 80s racing with crazy injuries back when, you know, doctors would let you get away with that. But for him to go out there and race an off-road truck, that's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, you know. I mean, there was word around that people were going to drive his truck and we're going to bring in Jarrett Brooks. And he obviously wanted somebody to sit in his place if he couldn't do it. But, man, what an animal, how tough he is and what he's doing for the sport with all these other trucks he's putting on the track. But just to be strong enough to mentally and physically race and then kick everybody's ass. And that's what I love about him. He's just got that drive like everyone else does, but he just will not give up. I mean, he was already on his bike on social media, firing it up and saying, I'm a couple weeks away from getting back on a dirt bike. But that's what he lived for, right? He came from that sport. He found off-road racing, right? When he started Hart and Huntington back in the day, when I remember him coming on a flatbed trailer with a pickup truck, right? He didn't come from a big network. He tried and worked his butt off, and now he's one of the big teams in the sport.
Yeah, and you talk about competitive desire. I mean, you know, I watch all kinds of pro sports, pro football. You know, a guy will play with a broken rib or something. It's, you know, a headline story. But jump into a pro to get thrown around like that, bumping and banging, you know, flying 175 feet off the big jump at ERX. To do that with, you know, 2 injuries to your core, like, I just can't imagine doing that. I really can't.
Yeah, and I had the opportunity to talk with him. I think you were standing right there at one point, and I was like, Ryan, were you scrubbing those jumps? He's like, what do you mean, Brent? And I'm like, were you scrubbing them? He's like, yeah, kind of. I'm like, why? Because you were in pain? He's like, honestly, he's like, the shocks land perfect, those Bilstein shocks. But he's like, when you're in that much pain, you have to set the truck down as soft as you can.
Well, you mentioned Ryan Beat and what he's done to bring, I guess, fresh blood into the sport, into short course off-road racing. He's bringing in a new driver for Dirt City Motorplex this weekend. How about this? Wyatt Miller comes from the Earnhardt family. His grandpa, Dale Earnhardt, you probably know that name. He's been racing winged outlaw carts around the Midwest, has a handful of wins at some pretty noteworthy tracks, Millbridge Speedway down in North Carolina. Last year, he won 20 races across 7 states.
Wow.
And he's still very young. He's going to be making his short course off-road debut.
Yeah, 12 years old, Shane. You know what we were doing at 12. That's crazy. It's so awesome to have the Earnhardt family involved in our sport. And we welcome every person and team that wants to be involved. But the kid is crazy good, I heard. So I'm very excited to throw him in the pro spec class and see what he does. And hopefully his family and friends love the sport. Maybe we can see Dale Earnhardt Jr. at the track.
I'm sure he listens to our podcast, you know, when all his downtime, when he's not hosting his own and making media appearances and occasionally racing. So he'll get the message, I'm sure. Well, another class that I've had a ton of fun watching, calling races this year, Brent, stock truck. Again, coming into this year, the champion from the last 2 years, Corey Holcher, moved on to super stock truck. We weren't sure who was going to step up, be a championship contender. We're through 7 rounds. We've had 7 different winners. 6 different winners were first-time winners. There's only 29 points between Brian Piott, who's the points leader, and Kyle Jenchak, who's 8th in points. Hope Conrad's the only driver in the top 8 without a win. So evenly matched, competitive class that's been. It's been so much fun to watch it.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And to call it from our eyes, it's great. Great TV. It's great fun. And they're very good at what they do. And I mean, it's been 15 years since I've driven in a stock truck. And it's come so far. And these drivers need to know how to drive these trucks without rolling over, without breaking the rear ring and pinion, taking a drive shaft out. I mean, they bump and bang, and we have some great talent. And I love seeing so many different winners at different tracks because the variety of drivers is just over the top. Like going into this next weekend here at Lena, I mean, who is it going to be? Rogaczewski? Piot? Piot's going to work right now, probably still finishing up the truck that they're whatever one they're going to build.
Yeah, they, so anybody listening that doesn't know, Brian Piot, points leader in stock truck, went out and almost completely destroyed his truck. And that's not the first time he's done that at ERX. They kind of scrambled. They ended up picking up a stock truck that Stan Wood had with him at the track and ran that in both classes in round 7 on Saturday, because Scott Belanger did a ton of damage to his own super stock truck in the round 6 race. So they're left with, for now, one truck that they're going to share, and then the other two trucks, they're going to try to put them back together, but it seems like, at least for the short term being at least this weekend at Dirt City Motorplex, rounds 8 and 9, they're going to share a truck and try to salvage what they can from this season. But Piot's still leading the points.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be so hard, right? You're trying to just put something together, but in Piot's eyes, it's like, this thing better freaking get out there and win, because he's not out there to get second or third. Yeah, it's points and points. But he needs to finish up top, because these other drivers, they're not weak right now. They still have their good equipment, and they're going to be ready to go to war.
Right, and I mentioned how hotly contested the point standings are. Again, 29 points from first place, who's Piot, back to 8th place. Nobody's been able to repeat as a winner yet.
Well, I think we're going to see it this weekend.
I think I agree with you. But regardless, Piot's still leading the points, still in the fight. Now he's going to be driving a truck that's mostly unfamiliar to him, that's going to be getting a lot of miles put on it.
Yeah, it's an open door, and I believe it's going to be a competitive battle, and we're going to see fenders rip off and people over jumping the turns and making mistakes, and it's whoever can keep their head and move to the front early. And if we see a great, beautiful weather weekend, it's going to be a fast little track for them.
Yeah, and for me, looking at the big picture, the points championship, whoever wins this points championship, they should feel a huge sense of accomplishment. Anybody that wins a championship should and does feel like they accomplished something. But to survive such a competitive battle and knowing that, like we said, all these drivers are giving everything they have at it, and it stayed this close for this long, to overcome all that and the adversity that every driver's faced. You know, when we started the year, it was Kyle Jenschak in round one that took the win, and he's struggled since then. But again, still in the points chase. So everybody's had the highest highs, the lowest lows. Whoever comes out on top, it's going to feel that much sweeter that you can survive that type of battle.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's what they're out to do. And if 5-6 people have a win, you want to be that seventh win if you already have one, right? You want to take the two and be like, hey, I got two. They only got one. So who knows who's next? And that's what's going to be so interesting. And it's pretty much our first truck race of the day, and so it gets us going.
Well, from the Sportsman heavy metal down to the lightest metal, the 170 side-by-sides. How about this? The Dreyers, Ashton Axel, the two brothers, and then their cousin Drake. They have now occupied all three podium spots for three straight rounds. You ever seen anything like that before?
No, it's crazy, but they put the effort in. They put the work in, and that's Mr. Mosier. He does everything he can for those boys, and he puts them in the best equipment, but they work on it. They're trying to work on their sponsorship programs, trying to go deeper into the sport, but these kids are young, and they're phenomenal race car drivers, and that's what's so cool.
Out of those three, Ashton Axel and Drake, Drake's kind of had the toughest season so far. But if you look back at the first two rounds at Dirt City Motorplex, Drake swept that weekend. So the family rivalry there might get a little bit hotter throughout this weekend.
Yeah, I really think we're going to see some good battles, especially when it's that small of a racetrack. But these Dreyer cars, they just get out front and they usually run away. And they're trying everything. So you got to give them credit. But that class is so competitive, and there's so many great drivers that we're going to have to wait and see. But I would have to put my money on the 66 or the 46.
Well, you know who I always put my money on, Brent? That's AMSOIL. And the reason why is because they have the products that protect and maximize performance in all your vehicles and motorized toys. You can go to AMSOIL.com, use their AMSOIL product guides to get exactly what you need. And when I say exactly what you need, you can tell AMSOIL what you're driving, whether it's side-by-side, snowmobile, ATV, motorcycle, something else. They'll package up exactly what you need, ship it directly to your doorstep, and they are a proud supporter of Champ Off-Road and this show. AMSOIL, run with us. All right, our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road podcast, presented by AMSOIL, is Amanda Vandenelzen from Racer On Demand. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, fans of Champ Off-Road, they've been at the races. They've no doubt heard your name, you know, as you were spotting for Chris, your husband. Now, Racer On Demand, tell the people what exactly that is. They've seen the commercials on the big screen, but what are you trying to accomplish with Racer On Demand?
So what we're doing is twofold. Realistically, the whole umbrella of this is all about building meaningful connections between racers and their fans, and also racers and their partners and sponsors. So on the front-facing part of this, we've got our online merch marketplace where fans can buy merch from all of their favorite racers. And we've got new racers all the time. We just launched in May, so we've got about 35 racers on right now. But, you know, every day, every week, we're adding more racers. So you can go online and all in one place find merch from all of your favorite racers. On the backside of that, though, all of our racers are being pumped full of resources to help them grow their brand, grow their program, grow their partnerships, and be able to build more meaningful relationships with their fans and their partners. So all in, it's really all about bringing more money into the pockets of racers. They're supported by every single sale on the website and by every single resource that's available to them there.
What about the way that business is currently done for selling merchandise and the way that racers are branding themselves pointed out to you that there was an opportunity for this?
You know, I think it's an opportunity realistically for everyone. So my husband, Chris Vandenelzen, races Pro Spec, and a lot of people think that we're doing a great job on our social media and with our partnerships. And I'm here to tell you that, like, we have a lot to learn still. And the fact that people are coming to us and saying, like, wow, you guys are killing it, really highlights the fact that there's so much to learn about how we could be doing this better. And we look at other motorsports and we look at, frankly, other businesses, because our race programs are businesses in themselves, and look at how much better connections are made outside of our sport and outside of motorsports in general. Looking at the fact that there's really not a lot of resources that are out there for racers to learn how to do this better and to be able to, you know, go out there and say, well, I'm a racer and I don't know how to promote myself. I don't know how to build a brand. I don't know how to reach my fans in a meaningful way and really differentiate myself from every single other racer that's on there on the track trying to win, right? You know, as much as we're trying to get people to recognize that they're running a business, they're building a brand, they are becoming their own voice and making connections with the people that relate most to them, we're also finding that racers at the track and online, they don't really have a great way to even have fans support them. So as we were starting to validate the concept of Racer on Demand, we reached out to fans and we reached out to racers and we asked them a couple of questions about, like, fans, why do you buy merch? How do you buy merch? What are the obstacles that you run into when you're trying to buy merch? And fans overwhelmingly told us that the number one reason that they buy merch, it's not because it looks cool. It's not because it's a design they like. It's 100% like because they want to support the racer financially. They want to put money into their favorite racer's pocket so that they can continue racing and be best supported on the track to help them win. And racers are selling merch because they want their name out there. And oftentimes they're doing that at a loss or at a net zero. They're not making any profit because they just want to get their name out there. And that's really incongruent. You know, racers are not making any money when fans are buying merch because they want their racers to make money. So we're all about putting that money back into racers' pockets by selling merch at a profit for our racers and giving that profit back to them.
But it's not only a convenience for the drivers, it's also a huge convenience for fans. And I can vouch for this personally, because while you were talking, I ordered a shirt. I found one of my favorite drivers on the site, racerondemand.us, and I made the purchase that quickly, and it'll get shipped to my door. So, you know, talk a little bit about that too. I mean, it's extremely, you don't have to run into the racer in their pit to buy a shirt from. You can buy a shirt from your basement like I just did.
Exactly. Yeah. And every single order is made on demand. So if you go online to the website, racerondemand.us, you order a shirt, that racer doesn't have to have inventory on hand. It's just going to be made when you order it. It's going to be shipped to your house. And that's beneficial for a couple of reasons. Like, let's say that you don't make it to a race. Well, you still get to order. If you're watching the live stream, you still get to order. And you still get to support your favorite driver from wherever you are. You don't have to have cash. You don't have to find the pits for the racer that you're trying to support. Like, it's all available, all in one place. Really easy to search by class. You can just search for a name in the search bar. You can drill down by going, you know, I want to search for prospect driver number 66. There's Chris's stuff. I'm going to buy a cool hoodie. You know, it's really easy to do.
It's amazing though, Amanda, like how much effort you guys put into it. And we respect it as just announcers and your friends. And like, it's cool that you guys took that next step to try to help people out. And I think more people need to do that because you're right. It's not a sport where you're going to make a bunch of money to create a living at first. But if we all work together and create brands and create longevity with different sponsors, I think you guys are doing the right thing to build our sport as a whole. And it takes a lot of guts and we thank you for it. But it's crazy how many people don't go online and buy their favorite merch is because it's not available. So what you're doing, I believe, is in the right direction, like I've thought from day one, but we appreciate what you do.
Well, I love that. Thank you. Yeah, you know, I think that's one thing that's a little bit different about our sport. Like, I've got connections in Circle Track, and the company that I work for in my day job sells wholesale tires and whatnot. So I've got decent connections that have connections into other motorsports. And one of our sales guys, he was talking to me about how he works with a Circle Track team that's pretty big. And he was telling me, he's like, you know, in Circle Track, merch sales float an entire race season. Like, people are able to race 100% off of just selling their shirt.
Wow.
It's crazy to look at the difference between that and what we do here. You know, full transparency, even as a pro team, we make a couple $100, you know, in our pits on the weekends when we're here and racing on our merch sales. It's really not even close to the expenditure of what we're spending to be here. But there are teams that are spending just as much to be where they are, and they're floating everything completely off of merch sales just because they're fans. They go out there and they expect to support their drivers by buying their merch. And the drivers, too, are putting out new merch all the time. You know, every track that they're at has a limited edition shirt because they're at this track for this one time only this year. And there's a shirt to commemorate that. It's really about connecting that memory. You know, when somebody's buying a shirt, they're not buying, again, they're not buying a shirt because it looks cool. They're buying a shirt because it's a memory and it's a piece of time that they were in a place at a time connecting to a driver.
I think you used the word connect or connection like five or six times in the last couple of minutes, but I think that's, you know, that word or that concept, making connections, is important to leverage that from short course racing too, because it's different from most other motorsports in that with the pits being open and interaction with drivers, you know, encouraged and celebrated, we love that that's part of off-road racing. It's surprising that no one has tried to build this kind of tool before to help strengthen and foster those connections between teams and fans.
I love the word connection, but I think it's really only a valuable word when you put the word meaningful in front of it, because, you know, you can stop by and have an interaction with somebody at their pits, but unless there's that meaningful connection where you're really relating to somebody, where somebody feels approachable or feels like, we talk a lot about values with Racer on Demand. Like, what are the values of a race team or a driver? And like, I can speak from our VDE racing perspective of our values are very much family based and about innovation and having fun. Those are really the three things that we center our brand around. And we're going to connect most to the people who relate most to those values, who really value family and having fun and innovation. And those are the people that are going to be attracted to us. Now, if somebody walks up and they 100% only value winning, and that's like, if you're not winning, you're not great, you know what? They're probably not going to be our best fan. And that's not a meaningful connection. And, you know, they might go down to somebody else's pits that are like winning all the time, and that's what they're here for. And that's fantastic. That's a great brand to have, especially in a competitive sport like we compete in. And they're going to find a meaningful connection with that racer instead. And that's where I think it's okay for us to find those fans that have those meaningful connections to us, instead of saying that everybody has to be our fan. Racers need to find a way to really relate to their fans in a meaningful way. And then fans also need to find a way to relate to racers in a meaningful way by connecting to them through their values.
And I do want to point out that Racer on Demand does not discriminate. This is not just for pros whatsoever. I'm the full class lineup I'm looking at on the website menu right now. Everything from, you know, 570s, 170s, all the way up to Pro Light, Pro Spec, and all the rest. So it's for everybody.
It absolutely is. And I will tell you that my business plan for Racer on Demand has started with focusing really hard on supporting our sportsman racers. That's something that we find really important. Like, obviously, Chris serves on the Moore board, so he is constantly working to support our sportsman racers. And Racer on Demand is no different. You know, who's going to benefit the most from having added money in their pockets from merch sales and from, you know, creating genuine relationships with their sponsors and partners? It's going to be the sportsman racers. So that's where we've really set our sights as we're launching and getting this off the ground, is in really supporting our sportsman racers. And you know what? The pros, they're going to come on little by little as they start to see value in it. And as we can start to work out like what is most meaningful for those pros, but they've already got a lot of the resources and a lot of the knowledge to be able to grow their partnerships and their fan bases. The sportsmen are what's really benefiting from this. And they're also the ones that fans have the hardest time trying to find. Like, imagine that you're walking around in the pits. The pro pits are really easy to find. You're going to be able to find the merch that you're looking for really easily. But try and find, you know, like a Josh Skiteman. Where is he parked? I have no idea. Does he have merch here? Maybe he can't even afford to hold inventory at the track But he can put his stuff online and you can buy his shirts and support him, even if he doesn't have inventory here at the track.
I don't have to imagine it because every single race weekend, Brent and I are walking around and I'll say like, oh, I'm trying to find Mottinger. Where can I find him? Don't know where his pit is. Although Ryan usually finds us.
Oh, he does. Finds everybody.
Well, hey, I know that, you know, you've been around short course racing now for what, 6 years? 6, 7 years? 8 years? So you know a lot about this sport. But more importantly, I think to me than that is you and I share an affliction. You are also a buggy dork. When did you become stricken with the disease?
Okay, fall Crandon 2 years ago when they brought the class 11s in. So, okay, I'll back up a little bit. So first off, spotting for Chris and then spotting for a couple of other classes too. Like I spotted for Josh Skiteman in Sportsman side by side and then in Pro-Am. And then maybe I shouldn't tell this story. It's a little bit embarrassing. I answered a Facebook ad for somebody who needed a spotter. And I had no idea who this person was. And it was for Pro Mod. At the time, it was called Pro Mod side by side. And I told Chris, I was like, hey, I picked up a Pro Mod driver. He needed somebody to spot for him. I don't know who this is, though. He's like, well, what's the name? I was like, Jason Weller. And he's like, you don't know who that is, Amanda? Like, no, is he cool? Like, he's like, Amanda, that's a really big name in our sport. You should probably know who that is. So spotted for the Wellers for the better part of a year in Pro Mod and learned a ton spotting for that class. But as I was spotting, I'm just kind of one of those people that I always want to be better at what I'm doing. And I'm trying to find different ways to be a better spotter. This year, I'm listening to Robert Nash spot for Chris, who is a brilliant spotter, let me tell you. I've learned so much just from listening. So I was trying to find ways to become a better spotter. And really, it came down to, like, I got to get in a car. I got to be able to read track conditions better than I can from the spotter's tower. Like, I don't know what it means to brake late. Like, I know what it looks like from the spotter's tower, but I don't know what that actually means in the car. And in order to better drive my drivers, I need to be able to be on the track and figure that out. So Fall Crandon 2 years ago, they brought the class 11s out and Chris had been telling me, like, let's get you in a light buggy or maybe a 1600. And I was like, I don't want to race that. It just doesn't appeal to me per se. But as soon as I saw the class 11s out there, I literally turned to him, I punched him in the chest and I said, it's that or it's nothing. So that's what I did. This spring, or I guess winter, we were out at King of the Hammers and we came home with a 1973 Volkswagen Beetle class 11 built to race.
not to derail this, but I just want you to know when you said that you weren't interested in light buggy in 1600, that's kind of offensive to me.
I apologize, Shane. Shane
wants to get in a car, Amanda, so like...
It's against everything I stand for to say that you don't like beam cars. I mean, class 11 is also a beam car, but still.
It's not offensive. I just, I really like the class 11.
Well, to be fair, that's like inner circle buggy dork. That's like a whole, like you caught the worst disease of all.
It is bad, but you know what? The people are the coolest people. Like those class 11 folks out west, I don't know if I know a better group of people, to be honest.
Yeah, my experience is the same. When I got to ride in one a couple of years ago with Corey Vandermark and Brian Pasco, great salt of the earth guys. Actually, I think my favorite part of that whole weekend, aside from being in a race car, was I introduced Corey Vandermark, longtime class 11 racer out in the desert, to Mark Steinhardt. And it was maybe 20 seconds into the conversation, they were like deep diving Volkswagen stuff.
That's awesome.
Buggy dorks, we're out here, I'm telling you.
I mean, would off-road even exist if it wasn't for buggy dork?
No, it wouldn't, because I remember as a kid sitting on Barker's Hill, my brother and I remember Scott Taylor running and the Vandermissens from Bark River, because that's all we knew really, because it was Bark River when we got to go and we were like 4 or 5. And I remember just watching the buggies and always hearing that noise in my head, because there was years where Jeff St. Peter was the only one that was in a truck because times were tough and it was all about the buggies and the slower cars. But like, that's what you watched. There was so many cars, so it made it fun.
You said slower cars, Brent, but I think you meant the cooler cars.
Yeah, I'm not ripping on anybody. They're at least racing.
And you know what? You said, you know, times were tough, so people were in buggies. And now you look at it, it's kind of the opposite, right? Like,
right.
In order to be in a buggy, you have to know how to fabricate and you have to be able to like build your own stuff. And it's not bolt on stuff. Like, that's where the side by sides are, frankly, a benefit to our sport, because that's going to be the entry level. That's where people can get in somewhat cheap and be able to just come in without knowing exactly what they have to do and be able to get in. And in the past, it's been very different. The buggies were the entry level. They were where people could come in without knowing much because it was Volkswagen stuff. But now that's so different.
Yeah, it's crazy how far it's come since those days. I mean, that's a long time ago. That's like 33 years ago that I remember being watching the races at Bark River. And it's cool to see pro buggy escalating and getting bigger. I mean, single buggy, we haven't seen those numbers in a long, long time, but light buggy, it's never boring to watch, right? There's always a battle through the whole field, and that's what makes it so entertaining.
I would agree with you on that. Light buggy is like, I mean, when I said that I don't want to race light buggy, it's not because it's not good racing, but frankly, it's intimidating.
Yeah, there's so many cars, you're going to be in a wreck.
You will get bodied by Greg Stingle on the racetrack.
Yes. And at least in my class 11, I've got some panels in the way, so it's not going to take me out of the race.
You just make sure you have your belts tight and your helmet on.
Yes.
Are you excited, though? I mean, honestly, it's got to be like huge for you. You never thought when you were a kid growing up that you'd be in a car.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know what off-road was until Chris got into it. So, like, I mean, I came from Chicago area and I grew up more with like muscle cars. And then I was big into like the import scene when I met Chris. I met him at a drift event and he was doing competitive drifting and rally racing. And then, you know, we got together and moved in together, and he had this crazy drift car, which was like 450 horsepower. And he was doing pro-am drifting. And he told me, he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to sell the drift car and I'm going to get a light buggy. And I was like, the heck is a light buggy?
It's not a heavy one.
Yeah. He had to show me videos of off-road. And I remember he was showing me videos of LeDuc and CJ battling it out at Crandon. And that was the first ever taste of off-road that I got, was some YouTube videos from like times past. And I was like, well, this looks cool, but are you sure you want to get rid of your drift car for this? And so he did. He sold his drift car and he bought a light buggy, and he texted me from Crandon on practice day, the first time he ever had it out. And he said, I've been taking, you know, drift cars through fences at 100 miles an hour sideways, and I've never had more fun than I did with a 50 horsepower buggy going off of the ground. This is what we're doing now.
I'm loving this. We're converting people to buggy dorks in real time right now.
Yes.
Amanda, what drives you though? Like, now that you're around it and you're part of it, and obviously this is what you guys do in your summertime, but like, what drives you every weekend now that you are in the racing sport?
100% hands down, it's the people. Like I said, we've been involved in different sports, from rally racing to competitive drifting. I mean, even like the car scene with car shows and things like that. I have never been in a community that is so supportive and so much of a family. And like I said, family is one of our values. That's something that we really hold dear. You know, this off-road community is a family. And if somebody's going to beat you, they're going to do it on the track, not in the pits. If you need anything, your biggest competitor, your biggest rival will come over and give you a motor so that they can beat you on the track instead of in the pits. And that's what really keeps me in this sport and keeps me supporting this sport and doing everything that I can to grow this sport.
So you're married to a racer, but that is your role on the team is so much more than that. And I think even probably calling you like a partner on the team really short sells you. I feel like that doesn't even tell the whole story. How do you define all the work that you do? Like, what if you had to put a couple job titles on it? You know, what do you do for Vandenhills and racing, VDE?
Gosh, I've done so many things. I've worn so many hats for our race team, but to be completely honest, it's totally fluid all the time. You know, it's kind of a fill in where needed because we're a pretty lean team. It's really just me and Chris and then his parents. And we typically have maybe two crew guys here with us. So this year is a lot about growing Racer on Demand. So I'm here manning our Racer on Demand booth. I'm running all of our social media for both accounts, the Racer on Demand and VDE Racing while we're at the track. But at the same time, like, I've done everything from, we used to manufacture our own merch on my Cricut at home. So that was a thing. I used to run all of our social media for both accounts. Chris has taken up when we're not at the races doing the VDE stuff. And then there's just frankly, like, keeping our household running while Chris is in the garage all the time. So spotting, I guess, is another thing. I don't know. I feel like it's all just life at this point, but making connections with people. I think I don't even realize the fact that most people probably get off of their day jobs and then stop working.
Right.
But Chris and I, we don't do that. You know, just yesterday, I didn't even move out of my chair. I was working from home yesterday. So I logged off my regular job and immediately I was on a Zoom meeting with another partner for Racer on Demand, which is, I'll give you guys a little sneak peek here. We have a really cool racer resource that we're about to announce that we just finalized yesterday. Really exciting. But stuff like that, you know, we're constantly on calls with sponsors. It's not just Chris that's going after sponsors and really building relationships. Again, I'm going to relate back to our values again. It's a family value, which means that when we're talking to sponsors, most of the time it's Chris and I both talking to sponsors and making sure that we're building that relationship together, because when we're bringing our partners to the track, Chris is busy a lot, and that means they have to know other people here. So it's making sure that our sponsors know who we are as a family so that they're comfortable being here and enjoying themselves when they're at the races too. So, I mean, that's a lot of roundabout probably, but I guess short answer is everything.
Yeah, it's crazy how much work goes into it. And just what you've said the last 3-4 minutes, it's crazy that people don't know what it takes to make things work and to keep it going.
Brent, you and I make that point quite a bit, like during Sportsman Racing.
Just, right, right.
You know, that's why we love Sportsman Racing, because, you know, it's family, extended family, close friends that, like, will wholeheartedly commit to, I guess, on paper, one person having all the fun. You know, the driver, in theory, gets to have all the fun, but, you know, the effort from everybody is still just an absurd amount of effort and commitment. How important is that, Amanda, to have that? You know, you said you're a kind of a skeleton crew, but super committed, and I know that, like, the same group of people have been with you and Chris and Dave for years now.
Yes, absolutely. We talk about this a lot. Actually, Chris and I, before I was talking to you guys today as we're setting up here at Lena. We were talking about, we consider ourselves like sportsmen. We were trying to figure out how to mix pro and sportsman together.
Shane will come up with something. Give him about 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. We came up with sportsmen. I don't know if that's maybe hard to say, but in the fact that, like, growing up through the ranks, we really had to kind of figure that out for ourselves. And at the same time, like, we made really great connections because we came up through the ranks, through the sportsman classes.
And right, you were camping in a tent and pulling the buggy on an open trailer, right?
We were camping in a tent and we were pulling the semi with the pro spec in it. We were racing pro and we had to walk back to the sportsman pits to go to sleep in our tent at one point.
Living the dream, Amanda. Welcome to the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. It cost a lot of money to get the semi here. We got to sleep in a tent. No, we got our RV here now finally, but to answer your question, you know, the dedication of our team and our crew, this is a really expensive thing for us to do. And it's really hard to get money in through sponsors. And that's a lot of work over a lot of years to really build a relationship that'll get you in enough money that you can pay a crew a decent wage, right? So it's really important that the crew is in it as much for the wins and the fun and the atmosphere as you are frankly, Chris and I, we don't really pay ourselves through racing. We put it all back into our team, and making sure that we've got the pit space and the vehicles that represent our brand well. And our team is there for that. Like, they're as much about us winning and bringing it back as their win as we are. Like, when we won at ERX race weekend, you would have imagined that our crew guys were driving that truck. It was their win as much as it was Chris's win. And it was absolutely, like, the best feeling in our pits for everybody to feel like they did their best and they put that truck up on the top of the box.
And that's how it should be, though. That's how it should be. And that's then you can step back and realize, like, hey, these people care about us more than just a fun weekend. And that's what I think. It's cool because been there, done that, been on teams that won. And it gives you so much gratification because you recognize, man, I tightened those four tires, I put fuel in it, and I bolt checked it. So you're like, man, it didn't fall apart, right? We're on a lot of teams. We're on Josh Hintz's team. We're on Ben Wanasiga's team. I'm telling you, they rarely broke. Like, they rarely had a bad day. And we said, hey, we can't help their driving, but we can prep the truck so it don't break. And, like, if you have people behind you, that's what it's all about.
And it's even bigger than the race vehicle. Like, our crew does an amazing job getting our vehicles ready to race. Between, you know, our team, we've got the Pro Buggy, we've got the Pro Spec, and we have two crew guys. And they bust their butts to make sure that those vehicles are prepped between races, especially when we're back to back. But on top of that, like, they are also the face of our race team. And before we went into this season, I work in human resources for a living. So this is probably like my corporate HR nerd coming out, but we had a get together with our whole team and we brought everybody into our shop and we talked through, like, what does our brand stand for? What are the actions that show up on our team that represent us well? And our race team told us what is important to them and what kind of actions are important to them and how they want to show up to fans, not just Chris. Like, Chris is, you know, on the podium as the face of our team and Dave is out there as the face of our team, but our crew is the people that fans are running into first when they're in the pits. So, you know, for them to say, you know, it's important that we show up and be helpful. Well, that means that when somebody shows up at our pits and they're a fan and they want something signed, they're going to go get a driver. Or if it's one of our competitors and they need a part, they know they don't even have to ask us. They just go find that part and they help people because that's our brand. And our crew is living that out because it's as much important to them as it is to us.
So looking ahead at what's next, Dirt City Motorplex, you've obviously spotted there for a handful of different drivers. You've actually made some laps there in the Class 11. What do you like about the track at Dirt City? And what does it take to go fast there?
Ooh, okay. It's a really technical track. And I think a lot of people are used to the big tracks like Crandon, Bark River, ERX, where you get a ton of speed and it's a drag race at those tracks. This track is different. This track is all about outbreaking the competitors, about really getting your machine to turn when it needs to turn and getting right back on the gas afterwards. And it's a low speed technical track. I, again, am talking 100% from a spotter point of view, because full transparency, when I was here in the 11, I was here the day before they did the next gen classes. So we were here both days. We were here practicing on Friday and next gen was on Saturday. And we were here to speak for Racer on Demand for next gen. So we were watching all the kids and in the Class 11, I was turning 10 seconds per lap slower than the mod cart kids, which was incredibly embarrassing in retrospect. But at the time, I felt like I was going to roll my bug. So,
well, to be fair, those kids have a lot more seat time than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I ended my day by crashing into a tractor tire on turn 3. So, you know, there are better ways to.
Hey, some of the best in the business, Amanda, hit those tractor tires. I promise you that. Like Shane likes to say, monster truck tractor tire.
The lap after mine, Kendra was out here practicing with us, and she rolled in the exact same spot that I hit the tire, so I don't feel so bad.
Well, at that point, you can blame it on the track.
Right, yeah, and then later, when Chris jumped into Dave's pro buggy, he bumped the exact same tire, so three of us hit that tire that day. That is not my fault.
So as a spotter, how much does strategy change or your approach to spotting change when it's a tighter track like that? Those tracks, Dirt City, Antigo, they lead to more physical racing. Does that require a different approach as a spotter?
Honestly, this sport is physical in general. I don't know that my approach changes track to track as much as it's just like a lot more to try and get out of your mouth in a very short period of time, right? When you're coming around a corner and then you're immediately setting up for another corner and you've also got somebody on your inside and your outside and you're trying to drive defensively and offensively coming into another corner one after another, it's just a lot to get out of your mouth very quickly. But our sport is all about kind of just being on each other all the time. It's not like desert racing where, you know, you've got long stretches of time without having another car on you. As a spotter, it's often about pushing your driver to their limits and making sure that they can see from outside of their car while they're driving it, and knowing who's around them at all times, but also like where they could be faster, where other people are taking better lines, where maybe they could go a half a car length out and really get the traction from the track, or braking later, coming into a corner. Like, I can't say how many times I've said, hey, everybody's out braking you in this corner. You've got to brake later, brake 10 feet later than you were, or cut in sooner but exit straighter, you know. And that really doesn't change track to track as much as you might think it does, other than the fact it's just busier here.
Yeah, the track, I mean, the track is so cool. I think it's very competitive. Like I heard you talk earlier that it's not a fast, wide open track, but if you make one mistake, it could cost you 5-6 cars, and you keep making those mistakes. It's hard to get through a pack, and it's hard to get up to the front unless you start up there, because you know there's going to be carnage. And that's why every time I start that show there, I believe I say it's a bullring track. It just reminds me of just small, technical, nobody gives a rat's butt and does what they need to do to get to the front.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this track is not fast, but it's really technical, which means that when you're making passes, you're probably bumping, right? I hopefully not so much in the open wheel cars, but especially like in the trucks, like we're racing, like to get past people, you're probably bumping in order to get past them. And it's just kind of the way it is. You know, there's good passes and there's not good passes. And hopefully it's only good passes this weekend.
That's what I love about the style of racing that Dirt City creates, though, is that there's some parts of the track where there's almost not room to pass unless you force there to be room. There's always excitement. Like you said, almost every pass there comes with a little shove on the way by.
Yeah, and then a little retaliation every time, yeah. And then that's when we have havoc.
Well, racers' feelings get hurt.
You know, and that's my favorite part of spotting, especially, I mean, spotting for your husband is probably something different than spotting for somebody else, because as soon as I can see him driving emotionally, like Robert is spotting for him this year. Robert told me when we were at ERX, he said, I look down to you in order to see if I'm making the right call, because I will like be motioning, calm him down, because I know immediately when he is driving hot in that truck and we've got to calm him down, because you're right, retaliation happens and just like driving stupid happens as soon as those emotions enter that truck. And it is really hard to get people back into just driving smart.
So what about the atmosphere at Dirt City, or just, I guess, the whole experience top to bottom? Thunder on Main on Friday night, all the cars go downtown. I was, the first time that they did that a couple of years ago, just blown away by, you know, people. Lean's not a big town, but you could tell, like, people heard the cars coming downtown, and they're like, well, this is something different. Even people that had no interest in the race were like, well, I better go check this out. And it was packed, and it's gotten bigger and bigger each year that they've done it.
You know, I think it's really fitting that Lena has had sportsman only races here, because it really is like, it embodies the sportsman racing of it. It's a community that all comes together to support racers and their local racetrack. And whether you follow Champ Off Road or any specific driver, it doesn't matter. You show up because this is what your hometown is doing. It's much like a small town Wisconsin as high school football or, you know, Friday night races at the Circle Track. You just show up because that's what's here, and that's what is defining your town at that moment. And I absolutely love the fact that it's so grassroots here, and right, everybody right. just shows up to support what is defining their town in that moment.
My perception too is that the Lena fans, part of this is because there's so dang many drivers from Oconto County. The fans, like, yes, they're there to support the event and support the community, but they also, like, they're into racing. They're big time race fans. There's Crandon draws big crowds, but you don't hear a roar from the crowd when there's a big pass going on in 170s. But Lena, they'll cheer.
I kid you not.
They're into
it. We pulled in here probably about 5:30, 6 o'clock this evening, and it's pretty empty because most people aren't loading in until tomorrow. But our semi-trailer has been here since earlier this afternoon. And I kid you not, Chris and I pulled the RV in with our trailer behind it with the Beetle in it. And we were here no more than 5 or 10 minutes when one of our fans drove up, pulled into our pits and said, "Hey, I saw you guys pulled in because I was driving by on the highway and I just wanted to stop by. I don't know if I'm going to make it to the race this weekend, but I just wanted to wish you guys a good race and good luck this weekend. But I got to go see you guys later." Like, just because they're driving by on the highway, like, that really does embody Lena and Oconto County and the people that live here and really support us.
Hey, that's a nice bow on all this. It all comes back to the connections.
Yes, exactly. Meaningful connections.
Well, hey, Amanda, we really very much appreciate your time. We also very much appreciate what you're doing with Racer on Demand, helping to elevate sportsmen and pro racing programs. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure to be able to share with everybody, you know, what we're doing with Racer on Demand and why it's so important that we support our racers and that our racers really take the initiative to support themselves through those meaningful relationships with their fans and sponsors. So thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to chat through that with you.
We will connect with you and the team this weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. We'll see you around.
Well, Brent, a couple more stories that I think fans should keep their eye on at the Dirt City Motorplex this weekend. Watch out for Joe Machosik, man. He was 50 points out of the lead in Superstock going into ERX, now only 36 points behind the points leader Nick Bing. That places him in a tie for third place. He ran into some issues with tech officials back at Antigo, but he's taking bites out of that points lead.
Yeah, he's really driven. He's ready to give it all he has. We talked to him after the weekend was done in the chalet, and he's out for blood, right? He wants to win. He ain't going to go out there and take you out, but him and his dad, they got a good engine package, a good setup truck, and they've been around it a long time, so I expect him to be up front, but he's really digging deep. Watch for him to really turn it on in this second half, and
Yeah,
Braden Boshaw, he's right there behind Nick Bing, and Bing's just been there every weekend, right? Just all tore up.
Consistency.
Yeah, his panels are gone, but hey, there's Nick Bing on third. There's Nick Bing, top five. You have to be consistent, like you just said.
Yeah, but if anybody can overcome that points deficit, an inspired Joe Machosik, I think, can get it done. That's going to be a fun points battle to watch right down to the end. Don't count out Braden, like you said. And Ron Cosiza tied there in third. Again, consistency for him has been huge this year. Keeps finishing on the podium. That'll go a long way for his championship hopes. Well, how about this? Sportsman side-by-side, separated only by 4 points. Tyler Woosterbarth, leading points, has 2 career wins, both at Dirt City. Trent Peets is the defending champ, 4 points back of Woosterbarth. Both those guys are from Oconto County, where Dirt City Motorplex is. Hometown track.
Yeah, they got a little bit more oomph underneath their throttle pedal now, because they're around their hometown crowd, your friends and family. You want to impress them, right? You've had all season to get your game on, and I think it gives you that little bit more mojo at the end of the weekend if you can show your best friends that you know how to drive, and it's a driver's track, and we're going to see some new drivers coming in that we haven't seen through the year so far yet.
Well, another hometown driver to keep our eyes on, Ella Holcher. Rightfully so. We talk about her an awful lot. She's racing in two classes like she has been for a couple of years now. But in 570s, this is her fourth year in that class. And this is the first time that she's been really in control of the points chase. 20-point lead coming back to her hometown. Already has a win there this year from the first time we were at Dirt City. Is she going to plant her flag again at her hometown track and extend the points lead?
Oh, I believe so. She's so good, and she knows how to drive these cars, and she's patient. She don't get in a wreck. She's not gonna go out there and just bump you and get you out of the way. She just waits for her point in time to make that pounce on the leader if she's not in the lead already. But it always seems like she puts herself in that right position.
Finally, Brent, we started this episode talking about some hot streaks, some win streaks. Got a couple win streaks on the line coming into Dirt City Motorplex. Ashton Dreher, 170 side-by-side, 4 in a row. Hudson Hool, 3 in a row now in youth side-by-side. And then the 2 pro side-by-side classes. Andrew Carlson, 2 in a row, swept the weekend at his hometown track in pro side-by-side. CJ Greaves swept out there in pro stock. Any of those stand out to you? You think that they're going to continue? I have a pick. I want to hear yours.
Well, I mean, how can you count out CJ Greaves, right? He's going to be ready to drive whatever they give him. I mean, I'm not just trying to always favor CJ Greaves, but he is one to watch, because if anybody can get this second half of the season and dominate, there's 9 times out of 10, Greaves' name is going to be on top.
Pro stock is tough, though, man. It's loaded. The Marquardt brothers are going to be back in the fray at their hometown track. A lot of different ways that could go. Jeb Boodle's been extremely fast in that class. I think, you know, he has a tough road to extending the win streak. All these drivers do. These are 4 really competitive classes. My pick to extend the win streak, though, is Andrew Carlson. He's looked bad fast in pro side-by-side all season. He's been tough in that class for a couple of years now. I think the momentum, the confidence, you know, you can fix a lot of things by going home sometimes. That's exactly what he did. Swept that weekend. I think that's the win streak out of those 4 that, you know, I'll lock in that he'll continue that at least one more win.
Yeah, he was a rocket ship at his hometown track, and that car is just so fast. It's dialed in, and I agree with you too, right? I'm just trying to spice some things up, and it's hard not to count CJ Greaves in, but yeah, you're right. This field is stacked, and it's going to get interesting, and I'm telling you, those open-wheel cars, you got to protect yourself, because you can go upside down real quick.
Can't wait to get back to this bullring. We go live on Saturday morning, 9:45 a.m. Central Time. Find us on Flow Racing as always, or really, Lena does it so well. The community does it so well. You really got to get there. If you're not going to be able to make it this year, mark it on your calendar for next year. Thunder on Main on Friday night.
Yeah, we got a parade, dude.
Parade. They parade the race cars downtown. The townspeople come out and support all the drivers. Live music, food trucks, all the rest. Tremendous experience. Cannot recommend Dirt City Motorplex highly enough, but find us live on Flow, live at the racetrack, 9:45 a.m. Central Time. We will see you there, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL.
Like that, I put some extra stank on that one.